श्री वैष्णव संघ की, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की, श्री सद्गुरु स्वामी प्रभु की, समवेत भक्त वृंद की, गौर प्रेम नंदी हरि हरि बोल, गौरी स्तुति समुद्र मुक्ति, गौरी स्तुति समुद्र मुक्ति, गौरी स्तुति समुद्र मुक्ति, गौरी स्तुति श्री श्री गुरु एन गौरांग गौरी स्तुति श्री गुरु भगवान मां विष्णु राय कृष्ण कृष्णाय बोले श्रीमद भक्त विराम श्याम विराम नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौर मंचन विशेष में हरि कृष्ण. Anthony, how long are you going to be here in my home?
I was planning to stay until the course finishes.
Well, that astrological thing finally came some time ago. So, just remind me. I have to get it off my email, but I can give it to you. Do you have a computer?
Yeah. Okay. Well, not my own.
Okay. Well, maybe one day you could. Wait, is it a laptop?
No, I'll just use the email.
Okay. All right, I'll try to print it out or something.
You can always email it to me.
Hmm?
That's the thing, you can email it to me.
Okay, you gotta give me your address then.
Okay, I'll do it to you.
We want to continue from where we left off yesterday. And I must say that at this point we are really launching into the technical aspects of the Bhagavad philosophy of creation, which, although it is very technical, at the same time, it directly impinges or is directly relevant to our personalities, our conditioned personalities, because the human nature, the human personality, is just a small emanation of the cosmic personality, of the personality, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so that is basically in sutra form what we are about to get into is covering. So we have looked at the transformation of consciousness, and we have seen that basically it is a transformation of rasa or taste. From out of this transformation, the field of activities, meaning material activities, karma, appears. How does that take place? A basic understanding can be gleaned from the following quotations, which are from purports to verses in chapter 10 of Canto 2 of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is one excerpt, one part from one of the purports, quotation. These are the words of His Divine Grace, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As such, before the creation or manifestation of the material cosmic world, the Lord exists as total energy, Maha Samasti. You might recall that we were speaking yesterday of Samasti, Maha Samasti, and Vyasti. So, basically, samasti, sama means the same things taken together. Then there's, Prabhupada mentions here, maha samasti, an even greater gathering of energies. And then there's vyasti, that's the position of the living entity. The samasti or maha samasti, that is the position of the Lord. He is the total controller. The controller of his total energies. And we living entities are vyasti. Vyasti means to be divided from. We think in terms of our existence as separate from that of the world around us, of the energies of the Lord, the all-pervading energies, his control. So from the multi-total energy, this is again Prabhupada's own words, from the multi-total energy, he further expands himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely adhyatmik, adidaivik, and adibautik, as explained before, vyasti. So, I just want to give a little note about that. Srila Prabhupada, in explaining how the senses function. So he talks about the adidaivik person, the deity of the eye. In other words, the original deity of sight is Surya. Not the original deity, that is of course Krishna. But speaking in terms of within this material world, the controller of sight, the demigod who is in charge of seeing, is Surya, the sun. And therefore Krishna, he says that one of his eyes is the sun and the other is the moon. By the moon's light we see at night. So the sun is actually considered an eye of the universal form of the Lord. And these demigods, because they're so powerful, they're also pervasive. So they dwell within our bodies. And so Surya also dwells within the eye, in our body. So then there's the that's the adidaivik person. So daiva is a form, a transformation of the word deva, demigod or god. The root is div, effulgent. So the demigods are effulgent and very powerful personalities. So the Lord of the Sun, Surya, he's expanded into each of our eyes. And so by his superior power, our eyes have the power to pick up the same images that he is illuminating as the solar disk. You see? He's illuminating this world as a solar disk, but also by his power, his localized power, which is actually expanded from the Paramatma, the Super Soul. Our eyes have the power to pick up the images, the forms, the roop, which are made visible by the sunlight. And this is simply mystical. I mean, we cannot get beyond that. This is, science can't really explain it. Science have some mechanical models when they talk about electromagnetic blah blah, you know, or electro-neurological blah blah blah. They can make these nice wordy descriptions, but if you ask them, all right, take those words into the library, into the laboratory, and please construct for us a mechanical eye that will see, and a brain that will register those images and see those images, and they're not able to do that. They can build computers that can create images that we can see with our eyes, but they're unable to build standalone eyes, standalone brains, standalone nervous systems, standalone living entities. You see. Everything they create is dependent upon their intelligence, which they have not created, their sensory perception, which they have not generated themselves. So ultimately, we're speaking of something which can only be understood, to use this word, mystically. It means supernaturally. So there is the adi-atmic person also. That means us. We are the Atma, we are the spirit soul in this body. And so by the arrangement of the adidaivik person, the adi-atmic person can perceive the images illuminated by the sun. And what are those images? What are those things out there? That is the Adi Bhautik manifestation. Bhautik is a transformation of the word Bhuta, which means elemental. So the world is made up of elements like earth, water, fire, air. And so that is perceptible to us by the grace of the Adi-Daivik personality, which is ultimately the Lord. So that's the sense here. That he further expands himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely Adi-Atmik, Adi-Daivik, and Adi-Bhautik, as explained before. Vyasti. As such, the whole creation and the creative energies are non-different and different simultaneously, because everything is an emanation from him, the Mahavishnu or Mahasamasti. Nothing of the cosmic energies is different from him, but all such expanded energies have specific functions and display as designed by the Lord, and therefore they are simultaneously different from the Lord. The living entities are also similar energy, marginal potency of the Lord, and thus they are simultaneously one with and different from him. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text 13, Purport. And then from the same chapter, same canto, from the purport of verse 30, Srila Prabhupada says this: the heart of every living entity is the seat of the Supersoul, Paramatma, a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without his presence, the living entity cannot get into the working energy according to his past deeds. The living entities who are conditioned in the material world are manifested in the creation in terms of respective inclinations inherent in them. And the requisite material body is offered to each and every one of them by the material energy under the direction of the Supersoul. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 9:10. When therefore the Supersoul is situated in the heart of the conditioned soul, the requisite mind is manifested in the conditioned soul, and he becomes conscious of his occupation as one is conscious of his duty after waking up from slumber. So that's explaining the same thing. That we are there as spirit soul. The body is there. The external world is there. But that does not account for our perceptions of this world and our actions within this world. This is not enough. And this is actually explained in the Bhagavatam that after the Virat Purush, the universal form, was manifest, the different demigods, who are controllers of different senses, then they entered it and they wanted to get it working. And they couldn't by themselves, because they're also ultimately just jivas. They're very powerful. They're empowered by the Lord. But because they're just jiva-atma, although all of them entered into the different sense organs and so on of the Purusha, the Virat Purusha, it would not move, it would not stir, until the Lord himself entered, and then everything began to work. So again, this is a mystical explanation. The hard-nosed materialists, they will scoff at this and they will say, oh, you're taking the God escape hatch. Fine. But yes, we invite you again, go to your laboratory, take your material elements, take your fancy ideas, and produce something. Like Srila Prabhupada said about that Dr. Kavur in Sri Lanka, who is challenged by one of his disciples, that at least a chicken can produce an egg. All you're producing is empty sounds. He was arguing that life arises somehow from the combination, some level of complexity of dead material elements, then life will appear. And so the disciple of Prabhupada's disciple was challenging him. Well, if that's what you say, then I invite you to such and such hall at such and such time. I'll be there. We'll fill the hall up with people, and you can just demonstrate what you've just said. We'll give you the chemicals, we'll bring them if you can't bring them. And you put them together and you produce something, some living entity. And the doctor, he hemmed and hawed and wrote all kinds of big, long, lengthy letters. You obviously do not understand the fundamental principles of science, blah, blah, blah. But when the date came, he didn't show. He was a no-show. He didn't come. So, that's Prabhupada's comment. At least a chicken can produce an egg. All you can produce are empty sounds. So, a question may be raised, as it was raised by Mahatma Vidura before Sage Maitreya in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.6, that if creation is a lila of the Lord, and that all blissful Lord is directly present in the heart of every living entity, why does His presence and His lila result in misfortune for the living entities? Maitreya replied that the misfortune of the living entities is atma viparyaya, or perverse identification. They have lost touch with their actual identity as part and parcel of the Lord, and are trying to find their identity with the energy, within the energies of creation. The Lord never loses His original transcendental sense of self as He sports with His illusory potency. This brings us back to the subject of the second part of this essay, Samasti and Vyasti. The Lord has His own divine purpose in His lila of creation, in performing His lila of creation. And that purpose includes Samasti. The word Samasti means including. That purpose includes the ultimate welfare of every one of His parts and parcels. Quote, "The material creation by the Lord of creatures, Vishnu, is a chance offered to the conditioned souls to come back home, back to Godhead." That's from the purport of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 10. So that's a very nice, succinct explanation in the words of Srila Prabhupada as to why Lord Krishna has created this world. You see, He's created this world to give us a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. That's His reason. What's our problem is that we invent other reasons why there's a world. Krishna gives His reason, and He makes it very, like Prabhupada said, the Vedas. He said, he gave the example of a dictaphone because He used one of these machines to dictate early in the morning, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so His disciples would bring Him the latest, you know, models of dictaphones. And Prabhupada noticed that with every one of these machines, there would come a manual, a user's manual, they're called. So Prabhupada said, just like some complicated electronic machine like a dictaphone comes with a user's manual, so this whole universe also comes with a user's manual, which is the Vedas, which are breathed out by this Mahavishnu. You see, Mahavishnu, when He breathes out, the sound of His breathing is called the Vakshakti, or the Shabda Brahma. And that is the underlying vibration of everything in the form of Vedic sound. Even scientists say that underneath everything, underneath all the phenomena, there is ultimately vibration. That's there in, at least some theorists of quantum physics have put forward this notion that the ultimate reality is vibration. Everything is simply vibrating. The problem with the scientists is that although they may understand that there's a fundamental vibration, they don't know what that vibration is saying. You see, they don't know the meaning of the vibration. They just know it's humming away. You see? And somehow out of this vibration, all of our experience is arising. But there is an actual order in that vibration. Just as we see clearly, there's an order in the world. We call it the laws of nature. So the origin of these laws of nature, dharma, just like you see the, you've seen the Vishva Rup Swarupa poster, Lord Krishna is showing His Vishva Rup. So notice that the Vishwarup stands upon a golden lotus throne. So that golden lotus throne in the 12th canto, in a chapter called Summary Description of the Mahapurush, is said to be the abode of the Sattvaguna and of Dharma. What is Dharma? Dharma, of course, means religion. It means law. It means also the essence of everything, the essential nature of everything, from the root dri. Like the Dharma, Prabhupada gave the example, the Dharma of water is to be wet. Another time he said, this is kind of funny, the Dharma of chili, you know, the green chili, is to be hot. The Dharma of sugar is to be sweet. So he said, if you find sugar that is hot and chili that is sweet, that is called adharma. Something is wrong. Something has gone wrong. You see? If you bite into a green chili and it tastes like a popsicle, you see? Something is wrong here. It cannot be a real chili. You think, oh, some candy manufacturer has made their candy to look like green chili. But this cannot be a real green chili because it tastes sweet. And if you take some sugar and put it on your tongue and it's red hot, you see, like this chili powder, then something is wrong. This cannot be real sugar. That is called adharma. So dharma means essence. So that is the throne on which the Vishwarup, the whole universe, is standing. You see. So there is a natural order to things, and the original expression of that natural order is the Vak Shakti, or the Shabda Brahma, the Vedic sound. And nothing can transgress that. You see? In other words, the Vedic sound says what is dharma, what is adharma, what is punya, what is papa. Everything is defined. So you may think, oh, I will not follow these laws. Well, then you just come under some other authority. That's all. You see, there is Yamaraj. The word Yam means to regulate. So if you refuse to be self-regulated by hearing, by Shruti, hearing what the Vedic sound has to tell you to do and not to do. Or as another time Srila Prabhupada said, there is Shastra and there is Astra. You see, Shastra means the scripture and Astra means the weapon of the Kshatriya, the weapon of the king, his sword. So in Vedic times, those who did not follow Shastra, they got a kind of drastic haircut. You see, the haircut was not up here, it was across here. The whole head came off. You see. And similarly in the universe, there's Yamaraj. So he's the regulator. Those living entities who refuse to abide, who think, oh, I'm going to be a rebel, I'm going to be an individualist. Why should I follow these irrelevant, these out-of-date, outmoded ancient scriptural texts which have no meaning to me? I'll just do my thing. All right, you can do your thing for a while until your subtle body has achieved its appropriate shape. Like we're saying, it's been shown how people who keep dogs, gradually their faces begin to look like those dogs. So Prabhupada actually explained, we have a certain time to work. We work the gross body with the pranas, prana sharira, or subtle body, linga sharira. And as we do this work, the subtle body is taking on a shape, you see. If you do the work, you have a human body, but if your work is like that of a dog, you see, a dog's work, you see. In other words, very low-grade work, fetch this, and always looking for reward, some nasty bun, you know, some nasty thing to eat as a result, and chasing after sex in the open outside. And, anyway, the things that dogs do. So if the human being, if he behaves in that way, then his subtle body is actually, even while within the gross human body, is going to take on the shape of a dog. and his face will start to look more doggish. The sound that comes from his mouth will sound doggish. You see? His mentality will be doggish. And so, Prabhupada said, the super soul is in the heart, and the super soul sees all this going on. And the super soul turns to Prakriti, his energy, who is standing right next to him. Because she is Lakshmi. Durga Devi is just an aspect of Lakshmi. It is said that in the Lakshmi Tantra that I think 1/1,000,000th part of Lakshmi is Durga Devi. You see. So anyway, Lakshmi is both Shukshma Prakriti and the gross Guna Prakriti. She is both the spiritual internal potency and the external potency in one person. So she can facilitate either desire. You see, if you have spiritual desires, then Lakshmiji is there in the heart. She's a manifestation of Srimati Radharani. So she will facilitate your spiritual desires. But if you have material desires, then she will facilitate that also. So Srila Prabhupada said, the Lord as Paramatma is sitting in the heart. He sees what this living entity is doing with the pranas. He sees the desires shaping. The desires are coming up into the subtle body and they're shaping that subtle body. And the Lord turns to his consort and says, he wants to be a dog. Give him the body of a dog. So she does that. In the next life, he takes on the gross body of a dog. Which fits, Prabhupada said, the gross body fits like a glove the hand. So the hand is the subtle body. So we do the work. See, in our karma in this life, we are doing the work to shape the hand into a paw, into a claw, into a hoof, into something. And then into a leaf, you see. These plants, they also have like their hands, their leaves, you know, spread out, look kind of like hands, or to, you know, a fish's fins, you see. So we do that work. We shape our subtle body. And then Maya, she just provides a glove in the form of a gross body. Of course, it's a painful process because the subtle body is carrying memories, conceptions from the human form, you see. In other words, still, even though we're very doggish, of course there are some people who are so perverted they would like to have sex with dogs, but most people still, they're attracted to the opposite, human sex, for doggish style sex life. So, that's why there is this place called Narakalok, the hellish worlds. Because then the human, whatever remnants of human consciousness are driven out of the consciousness, driven out of the mind by the application of pain. This is very scientific. You know, we think of this in terms of, because you know, my family, many of us here, I think, we were born in Christian families. So you grow up, when I grew up, when I was a small child, I was given moral instructions by my mother and father. And it's all, you know, do this, don't do that. And there's this, it's very much what Freud rebelled against. You know, there's this all-seeing, angry God above the whole thing. And if you do a bad thing, God will see it and He will punish you. You see? So there's this threat of punishment. And then after some time, you know, you throw that off. You reach teenage years, those hormones start pumping through the body and you don't care anymore. You see? Punishment, to hell with punishment. I'm not afraid of punishment. There is no punishment. I read in some book by Jean-Paul Sartre, I used to read him when I was a teenager. So Jean-Paul Sartre says, there's no hell, there's no heaven, there's no God, there's nothing. There's only nausea, the disgust of living in this world. You see?
It's just a nauseating condition that we have to live for a few years in, and then we die, and then there's... He wrote a book, another book called Being and Nothingness, you see. You be for a while, and then there's just nothing, you see. So as a teenager, for a while I was absorbed in these kind of readings. So I completely rejected, because it's not very intelligent. This is the way you threaten little children, you see. You threaten them, if you do this, I will hit you. And then for a while, as long as the child is small, then out of fear they will obey you. But it's just out of fear. It's not out of knowledge. So, but we should not think of naraka, which means hell, like the Christians think of their hell, that it's simply a place of punishment because you are bad. You see, the Christians have this idea that you go to hell and you're there forever. You're just punished forever, just punished because you were bad. But the Vedic conception, yeah, of course, there is the element of punishment. But there's also, what's really going on is it's the fulfillment of what you want. Perhaps in a very extreme way, but... This is what you want, this is what you worked for. You got a human body and you didn't want to use it for what a human body is meant to be used for. You know, it's something like going, you know, imagine some farmer here in Nadia. Somehow he wins a lottery and he wins enough money to buy a Lamborghini sports car, you know, which is one of the most expensive and fancy Italian sports cars. So I don't even know if they sell them in India, but somehow he gets a Lamborghini sports car. But he's a farmer who lives in a village here. So what does he do with the sports car? Well, the only other four-wheeled vehicle he ever drove was a tractor. So he takes his Lamborghini out into the field and, you know, puts one of those plows behind it and goes driving over the field, plowing the field. That's not what the sports car is meant for, but that's how he's using it, because that's all he knows. So if we get a human body and we use it as a dog uses a dog's body, what does it mean? It means we don't really want a human body. So, but we receive the human consciousness, so we don't want it, so that has to be eradicated. So the effective way to eradicate the remnants of human consciousness is by pain. And everyone has had experience of that. You know, you can be somewhere and you're, especially if you're ever a student, and you know, you're thinking of, well, tomorrow we're having final examinations, and you're thinking of, you know, the essay paper you've got to write and the answers to the questions, and you know, and you're trying to remember all the dates. So you've got all these lofty thoughts in your mind, and then you suddenly stub your toe. What are you thinking of in the next instant? The lowest part of your body, your toe. And all those fancy thoughts, they vanished, they're gone. And all you're doing is, ow, my toe! And the toe is the lowest part of the body, you see. And you're squeezing your toe. So your whole consciousness is zoom, suddenly been focused totally upon your insignificant toe. And all those fancy thoughts are gone. So this is what happens in hell. You had a human body, but you didn't really want it because you didn't use it as the Vedas prescribed a human body should be used for. You worked and you produced a subtle body that is fitting to be placed in the body of a dog or a cat or something like that. But there's some remnants of human memories, you know, human tendencies left. So they have to be gotten rid of, because you won't be able to enjoy the body of a dog. You want to enjoy a dog's life. That's what you want. That's what you've shown the Lord by your human life. But you wouldn't be able to enjoy that if you could remember. You see, in the body of a dog, if you could remember your last life as a human being, it wouldn't be a very happy experience then. So you want to enjoy, so the Lord says, all right, we'll remove all obstacles to enjoyment. But first we have to apply a little bit of pain. No pain, no gain. That's what they say, right? No pain, no gain. You want to gain happiness as a dog? Right? So there has to be a little pain, a little time in hell, just to get rid of those human tendencies, just to make sure they're gone. And now you're ready. Here's your nice, new, brand new German Shepherd or Collie or Schnauzer body, 2006 model. Go on, take it for a spin. Oh, I love this body. Oh, it's great. I'm running around. I'm barking. I'm wagging my tail. So much fun. And there's a nice she-dog. Ah, let me go and run up and have sex with her. See? So much fun. See? After a little bit of pain. And it said in these, it's actually said that in these, just like, time as you come down from heaven, so, you know, we come down to the human level, then time is getting less. So when you go down further, time is getting less. So actually the time in hell is very brief. Unless, of course, one has been very, 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 very sinful, then sometimes it's said one has to stay in hell for a whole day of Brahma or a whole lifetime of Brahma if one has committed very severe offenses. But for an ordinary soul, the time in hell is not all that long. And then they're released and they can take their lower form of life and enjoy and gradually come up the evolutionary cycle. So actually what's going on in material nature is that our perverted desires are being facilitated by Maya. That's what we want, that's what you get. But you have to get it according to the law. There's a law for all this. You see, we are not the law makers. We can be law breakers, and then we get a certain result by the law. Prabhupada said about governments, he said, at least the sane governments, you know, the sane normal governments, they would rather not have prisons systems. They would rather not have police forces. You know, that's always the utopian ideal, a society with no policemen, or like in, I don't think it's any true anymore. Someone from England can correct me, but it used to be the bobbies, the policemen didn't have guns, you know, and very, very rarely had to use any force, you see. It was a very rare thing. So that's sort of an ideal of old. But in real life, people are rascals. So if they break the law, then there's an arrangement. But our breaking the law, that's our desire. So actually, the arrangement is simply to provide under certain restricted conditions means for you to satisfy your desire. Like Prabhupada once said, the mosquito is addicted to sucking blood. So thank God there are no 6-foot tall mosquitoes. If you were walking through the wood and you met a 6-foot tall mosquito, you would be an empty husk in a few seconds, you see. The thing would stick its snout into you and just suck every drop of blood out of you and just leave you lying there, looking like a mummy. You know. But under the laws of nature, mosquitoes who have this voracious appetite for blood, they're just little tiny things that buzz around. You see, they can get their blood, but under restricted conditions. So that's the way material nature works. So Yama, there's a regulating principle, and there's Yamaraj. So he's the lord of hell, and so he arranges for the punishment, and then he arranges that living entities are placed in appropriate bodies and released from hell, and then they can enjoy as they want to. But of course that's not real enjoyment. So anyway, to move on, yes, the context here was that the Lord has His own divine purpose in performing His lila of creation. And that purpose includes the ultimate welfare of every one of His parts and parcels. But from their conditioned vyasti point of view, the living entities see this creation differently. Payam dvitiya binivishyatsha, the 11th canto of Bhagavatam says, that when you see things dvitiya differently, what is that? The cause of bhaya, fear. It immediately places one in a fearful condition because you're a lawbreaker. The creation was made for this purpose, but you have a different idea and you're immediately a criminal. Prabhupada once told the story, he was riding with a policeman, a police friend, through a certain part of Calcutta in the evening after the sun had gone down. And he was noticing that as the police car was going down the street, there were these persons who were jumping into alleys and, you know, jumping into doorways and disappearing as fast as they could. And Prabhupada, you know, innocently, he asked his friend, why are they doing that? And the policeman said, oh, these are criminals, you see, and they see a police car coming, so they're running. So this is the consciousness of the criminal, because he's a lawbreaker, so he's always fearful of being caught. So bhaya, fear, that is actually the ruling principle. This is you see in lower forms of life, it is a predominant principle. Watch a bird. When a bird flies down to land to peck some food from the ground, watch it what it's doing, watch how it's moving its head all around. Why is it doing that? Because it's looking for some enemy. Some cat may be behind the bush or whatever. From some side, some attack may come. So its head is always moving this way, that way, looking everywhere. You see? So in these lower forms of life, fear is the predominant principle. Yeah. So, therefore, quote, Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Verse 69. I'd like to read that again. So, of course, this is not the only definition of Krishna consciousness that we'll find in Shastra, but it is a very interesting one. That Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can see, can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. Exactly. Canto 4, chapter 29, verse 69. So exactly as Krishna sees everything, so the pure devotee sees everything. And to the degree that we see things differently, to that degree we're in Maya, to that degree our minds are separate from Krishna, and to that degree we will suffer. Inevitably. That is the law of nature. Let us consider in a more detailed manner how the Leela of creation unfolds. Shastra describes it as having four stages. So I put on the board here. Now I want to tell you that this is an introduction. So actually the language of this introduction is taken from the Upanishads. It's very general. But these are the terms that the Upanishads use. And we have in Prabhupada's, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in Prabhupada's purports, we have equivalent terms that are personal. This language is more, tends to be more impersonal because it's from Upanishads. But I wanted to lay the foundation. I wanted to show you by giving this Upanishadic language that this is the Vedic explanation of how creation unfolds. And what we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam is exactly the same. Only the terminology is more personal. That's all. But this you find in the Upanishad. So this is classical Vedic knowledge of creation, the unfolding of creation. So Shastra describes it as having four stages. Each stage is a byproduct of an expansion of the Lord. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, verses 29 and 30, the purport. The Supreme Living Entity Krishna eternally manifests Himself as the Chaturvyuha, or quadruple plenary expansion. The purport of this prayer is that one should give up his false ego and pray to the Chaturvyuha by offering them obeisances. Although the Absolute Truth is one without a second, the Absolute Truth displays his unlimited potencies, his unlimited opulences and potencies by expanding himself in innumerable plenary forms, of which the Chaturvyuha is a principal expansion. The original being is Vasudev, the personality of Godhead. When the Godhead manifests his primeval energies and opulences, he is called Sankarshan. Pradyumna is the basis of the Vishnu expansion, who is the soul of the entire universe. And Aniruddha is the basis of the personal manifestation of Vishnu as the super soul of every individual entity within the universe. Among the four plenary expansions mentioned here, the original expansion is Vasudeva, and the other three are considered to be particular manifestations of him. When the living entity forgets that both he himself as well as the material nature are meant for the Lord's service, the quality of ignorance becomes prominent and the conditioned entity desires to become himself the master. Here's another quotation. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 256. This is a verse. The first Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, in the causal ocean, who is the creator of the aggregate material energy, is an expansion of Sankarshan. The second Purusha, Garbhodakashai Vishnu, is an expansion of Pradyumna. And the third Purusha, Chirodakashai Vishnu, is an expansion from Aniruddha. As Srila Prabhupada notes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.14.8, understanding the Chaturvyuha, Lord Krishna in his fourfold Vishnu Tattva manifestation that begins with Vasudev, poses, quote, complex problems for the layman, unquote. We will start unraveling these complexities. You're lucky I don't have a revolver. I swear to God, if I was packing a gun and I hear one of these things, I hate them so much. There'd be a lot of dead devotees. I guess I'd go to hell for that. Therefore, I don't carry a revolver. But you shouldn't carry the damn phones. Or at least leave them on during the class. Okay, we will start unraveling these complexities by mentioning that in these four forms, Krishna expands his pastimes beyond Goloka Vrindavan. You see, there's an Adi Chaturvyuha, and then there's the Chaturvyuha for material creation. So the Adi Chaturvyuha is described first. He, for example, Lord Ramachandra is the original Vasudev. He and his three transcendental brothers are the Adi Chaturvyuha. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.1.34 purport. Sri Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha, is an expansion of Vasudeva. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.16.26-30 purport. So the original, the Adi Vasudev, is Lord Ramachandra. So Ayodhya Dham, the transcendental Ayodhya Dham in the spiritual sky, there is Goloka Dham, there is Mathura Dham, there is Dwarka Dham, and then the fourth is Ayodhya Dham. Ayodhya Dham is the fourth station of the spiritual world that is also above Vaikuntha, the realm of Mahanarayan, Mahalakshmi. So Ayodhya Dham is where the original Vasudev as Lord Ramachandra and his three brothers, Lakshman, Shatrughna, Bharata, they are the Adi Chaturvyuha. But that Ayodhya Dham is, of course, Divya Dham. It is spiritual, transcendental. But there is a later Chaturvyuha, these expansion from which the Purusha avatars expand, which are the cause of creation. Besides being eternally present in the spiritual world, the four personalities of Chaturvyuha also appear in the Mahatattva. See, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 20.276 purport. Chapter 20, verse 276 purport. How these quadruple forms of Godhead give shape to the Mahatattva by their divine presence. You see, the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva means the Pradhan. It means the unmanifest material nature. All the ingredients of material nature are brought together in Mahatattva, the total material energy is called the Mahatattva. And these four personalities of Godhead, by their appearing in the Mahatattva, they give that Mahatattva form. So how they give shape to the Mahatattva by their divine presence is a major topic of discussion among great sages of the Vedanta philosophy. So what follows is a summary from the Upanishads. Please take note of the states of consciousness and their symptoms that are associated with each of the four. Also note that in the Upanishads, the Chaturvyuha are named Brahman. You see? That is the Upanishadic name for Vasudev. Ishwara for Sankarshan. Ishwara is the name of Lord Shiva, and Lord Sankarshan is, Prabhupada said himself, non-different from Sadashiva, which is the original form of Shiva. So Sankarshan and Shiva, Prabhupada said, are actually the same personality. Specifically, Lord Shiva is Mahavishnu. Sadashiva is Mahavishnu when he's closing his eyes. What is happening when Mahavishnu closes his eyes? All the universes are destroyed and come inside of him. So Shiva is the destroyer. So when Mahavishnu closes his eyes, then that is Sadashiva. When he opens his eyes, then he's glancing at material nature and impregnating it and starting the creation anew. Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha, you see the third name, that is the Upanishadic term for Pradyumna. And Virat, that is the name for Aniruddha. So we see in this table that I've drawn that the aspect of the absolute Brahman or Vasudev, the state of consciousness and the symptoms of that consciousness, the state of consciousness of Brahman or Vasudev is called Turiya. Turiya in Sanskrit means the fourth stage. The fourth stage, fourth above what? Above Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. So this is Vasudev, this is called in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudev Sattva or Vishuddha Sattva. It is pure goodness. It is goodness without any touch of, the slightest touch of Rajagun Tamagun. I gave that slightly off-color joke a while ago. Very slightly off-color joke about the father. He dotes on his teenage daughter. He's very fond of her. But then one day he receives shocking news that his daughter is pregnant. And he's just sold out to his daughter. This is human nature, that generally fathers tend to be very attached to their daughters and mothers tend to be very attached to their sons. So he's very attached to his daughter, you know, he really protected her and took nice care of her. And then he hears some whispering that his beloved daughter, the apple of his eye, has gotten pregnant. And he's just so shocked to hear this, and he doesn't want to believe it. So she comes home from school and he sits her down and he says, "Dear," he's very, you know, nervous, and, "Dear, I have to ask you one question, please don't mind, but it's really disturbing my mind. I've heard this story. I have to tell you what I've heard. I've heard that you're pregnant." And her face becomes immediately red and she looks down like this. And she says, "I'm only a little bit pregnant, Daddy." See, but only a little bit pregnant, sorry. In 9 months, it will be obvious to everyone. See, maybe you're still slim and beautiful, but a little bit pregnant means in time it will all come out. So similarly, material mode of nature, material mode of goodness, the material sattva guna, means in time, Rajaguna, Tamaguna will come out. You see? See, so he may look like big, important Brahmin, Bhattacharya, nose in the air. You see, he's spouting all kinds of shlokas and, you know, doing all kinds of rituals. But in some circumstance, if his ahamkara is agitated, then suddenly he's shouting and screaming, and you see Rajagun, Tamagun evident, and everyone is going, "What kind of sadhu is that?" I always ask that question in the interview. What kind of sadhu is that? I'm so disturbed. So angry. You shouldn't become angry. That's the way in India they test you. If you're a real sadhu, they do things to see if you become angry. Deliberately. And if you're not angry at all, then he's real sadhu. And if you're sadhu from the West, that thing that they do to make you angry means they take all your money. You go to some shop and they charge you 10 times the price, take all your money, and if later you find out they cheated you, and you come back angry, they say, what kind of sadhu are you? You should not be angry. So Turiya, pure consciousness, above the three modes, the creative manifestation, or in other words, the type of body, is Brahmabhuta. There is no body. There is no gross physical or even subtle body. No kind of material body at all. It is beyond material embodiment. Pure soul. And this stage of creation is called Brahman, above the three gunas. Then at the Ishwara stage, which is the Sankarshan stage, the state of consciousness is actually two, because this is the beginning of duality. You see, with the appearance of material creation, duality makes its appearance. So at the Sankarshan stage, there are actually two kinds of consciousness. One is called Pragya, which is intelligence in avyakta. So Pragya is achieved by great mystic yogis. You'll find actually in the Srimad Bhagavatam the description of Maharaj Yudhisthira. When he is going back home, back to Godhead, he's winding up his life in this material world by the process of mystic yoga. And in the Bhagavatam, it describes when he merges his buddhi and ahamkara into abhyakta. You see? So this is a stage of yoga. Abhyakta means non-manifest. And then one goes beyond that. The devotee of the Lord goes beyond the avyakta, the pradhan, or the mahatattva, and enters Vaikuntha, enters Golok. In Brihad Bhagavatam, that is described. But those yogis who are specifically devotees of Ishwara, of Sankarshan, particularly Sadashiva, then their goal is Ishwara Sayujya. They want to merge into Ishwara. They want to lose themselves, lose their identity into Ishwara. So then this is the Pragya state, intelligence in avyakta. They are aware we are not the body, but their consciousness then merges into the unmanifest or the achit shakti. Lord Mahavishnu has his Chitshakti, which are the jivas who come out of his body and take bodily forms. Then he has his Architshakti, his unconscious energy, which is this matter. So to merge into avyakta means to merge into the Architshakti of Ishwara. And then also, so these great yogis, they achieve this. They achieve this by, just like Mahavishnu, what is his lila? His lila, he's just laying still on a natashesh, and he's in nidra, yoga nidra. It's a transcendental state. Actually, in his yoga nidra, he is dreaming of the pastimes of Shri Radha and Krishna, his own pastimes. He's an expansion of Krishna. So he's dreaming of his original personality as Krishna, enjoying with Srimati Radharani and the gopis. You see, that's his meditation in his yoga nidra state. But these kind of Ishwara Sayuji yogis, they're impersonalists, so they're not interested in that. They want to merge and lose their existence. So they also, like Mahavishnu, they suppress their sense activities. They do nothing with their senses. They're holding their senses still in the trance of meditation. Yam, niyam, asan. pranayam. By pranayam, then they gain full control of the senses, so that pratyahara, they can withdraw the senses from their objects, so that there's nothing more to see, nothing more to hear, nothing more to smell, nothing more to taste, nothing more to touch. And that, what is that? Abhyakta. You see? Abhyakta state. But other, most living entities, they're in another state of consciousness called, or shall we say, state of unconsciousness, called susupti. And we're all, in 24 hours, we all enter that susupti. When we sleep, we go into dreamless sleep. There is a bliss in there. It is also considered to be a kind of Brahman realization in the mode of ignorance. Because as Ramanujacharya explains, when one awakens from a deep sleep, one feels refreshed. You see, we need that sleep because we actually enter into the embrace of the super soul. Actually, we actually go back to Mahavishnu, because the super soul is non-different from Hiranyagarbha Vishnu, who is non-different from Mahavishnu. So we actually merge into Mahavishnu for some period in the night, and we are refreshed. And so we awake from a sound sleep, a very deep sleep. We don't have any real memory of it. You see, it's a dreamless sleep. But what do we say when we awake? Oh, I slept well. So there is some experience of bliss, and we carry that with us. Yes, last night I slept so well. I slept like a log. You see? You see? So, at the end of the day, there's really not so much difference between this pragya, this intelligence in abhyakta attained by the yogis after so much, so much austerity, self-control, and going to sleep at night. There's not that much difference. It just means the absence of awareness of things of form, things of taste, things of smell, things of touch. And what is the embodiment? That is called the Karana Sharira, or the causal body. Just like Mahavishnu's one name is Karana Dakshay Vishnu. He lies in the causal ocean. So the root of our material identity, the ahamkara, the false ego in its root form, is called the Karana Deha, or Karana Sharira. It's the causal body. It's totally in... also in ignorance, in tamoguna. We are not aware of it. But embedded in it are all the seeds of desire. The seeds of our desire are embedded in the causal body. And this stage of creation is in the Upanishads called Mahat. Mahat means great intelligence. So there's great intelligence behind the creation, obviously. So in this Mahat stage, then that is the contemplation, the Lord's, just like it says Mahavishnu, his dreams become the reality that we experience. So there is the contemplation in the Lord's intelligence of the form of the universe, or the universes. You see, the plan of creation is there in the Mahat stage. The next stage is called the Hiranyagarbha manifestation. So Hiranyagarbha means the golden womb, and is also name of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. You hear the same Garbha. Garbha means womb. And in Upanishads, this is called the Taijasa, which is the stage of creative intelligence. So Mahat is contemplative intelligence. Simply the idea, the pure idea of the form, but at the Taijasa stage, that is creative intelligence. And there is also, we're experiencing this ourselves in the form of Svapna, dream, you see. And Srila Prabhupada, specifically for devotees, Srila Prabhupada said, this is Krishna's mercy upon devotees, that we have many as I explain to those who have, I don't know if anyone, I guess you've taken the Mahasudarshan Jnana Yajna that we do. So in the Sudarshan Yantra, there's eightfold petals, lotus petals, middle ring of lotus petals. And these are known as the Astapuri, the eight cities of dreams, eight places we go at night. So, Svapna, we're all dreaming at night. And what are these dreams? So, these dreams, one of the places dreams are coming from are from the vasanas. They're coming out of the causal body. The seeds are sprouting and growing, and then they appear in dreams as desires. So Srila Prabhupada said that there's a special mercy for devotees of the Lord. We have so many karmic seeds stored up in our hearts. And not all of them may be burned up by chanting of Hare Krishna. That's compared to frying a seed, you know, frying a seed in a pan. It will never grow. You can fry the seed, and then you can plant it in the ground, and you can water it all you want. It's never going to grow because it's been fried. But sometimes chanting Hare Krishna doesn't fry all the seeds because maybe we're not chanting fully attentively or whatever. So there's a special mercy that Krishna gives to his devotees, that we can live out our karmic desires in dreams. So sometimes we have strange dreams, you see. And we awake from them, and why did I dream like that? Why did I have such a nasty dream of some gross sense gratification? Well, you should thank Krishna. You should thank Krishna that it was only a dream, because by your karma it was supposed to happen physically. But Krishna let it happen only in dream, just to get rid of it. This Prabhupada explains in the fourth canto. So, and the creative manifestation or type of body is Linga Sharira, the subtle body. And this stage of creation in the Upanishads is called Taitasa, which means the effulgent appearance of pure form. This is when Lord Brahma appears on the lotus flower, and by his meditation, he realizes the form of Hiranyagarbha or Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And based upon that form, he does the great sacrifice which is described in the Purusha Shukti hymn of the Rig Veda. It's a mental sacrifice out of which the gross cosmic manifestation comes into being. And therefore you'll find in that Purusha Shukta that the mind of the Purusha is the moon, the sun is his eye, so many things are coming out like that. And this is all by the agency of Brahma. So this is also called Pashyanti. Pashyanti means to see. So Brahma, he sees the form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and based on that form then he creates. So this is Taijasa. Taijasa refers to the mode of passion. So Brahma is the Rajoguna avatar. So in ancient Greek philosophy, Plato, the philosopher Plato, he had this idea of the realm of pure ideas, that the gross forms of this world are shadow reflections or something like that, some sort of emanation from a realm of pure forms. But that he did not mean by that Goloka Vrindavan or something like that, because he was a Greek after all. He was not a Vaishnava, he was an ancient Greek, and they were not very elevated in their habits. Socrates is described in the Symposium, a work of Plato, because Socrates was Plato's guru, so he was describing attending a party and drinking lots of wine. The only thing was is that he didn't get drunk. He could drink as much wine as he wanted and never get drunk. So he had some kind of special consciousness was there. But anyway, these people were wine drinkers. But besides being wine drinkers, they were thinkers. So somehow they conceived of this realm, what they call of ideal forms, which is this Hiranyagarbha realm, in which the 16 constituents of a creation are manifest in a golden kind of ideal or perfectional material manifestation. It's material, but it is golden, and compared to this world it is considered pure or materially tinged consciousness. That's what it is, materially tinged consciousness. Golden, Hiranyagarbha, golden. So these 16 are there's the mind, there's the 5 active senses, the 5 working senses, and the 5 objects of sense perception. So out of these 16, then everything in this material world is derived. And then finally, at the stage called Virat, which is a stage of gross material manifestation, the state of consciousness is predominated by Ahamkara, and is also Jagrata, wakefulness in this body. We're awake in this body, but by Ahamkara we're identifying with this body as the self. The creative manifestation is the gross body, the Stula Sharira, and the stage of creation is called Vishva. It's a stage of the gross cosmos. So, Birat is, we'll read more about that tomorrow, the different meanings of these terms as we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So tomorrow we will go into greater detail, greater and greater and greater detail about this. And where are we heading with all this? Well, all of this is intimately connected with the Bhagavad science of mind or human psychology. We're starting on the cosmic scale, but all of this is reproduced within ourselves. So these stages of consciousness, Turiya, Pragya or Sushupti, Svapna, dream, sleep, Jagrata, we're experiencing this in 24 hours. You see? We're going through this. This is happening on a cosmic scale, but is also happening on a local scale. So the more detail we go into, I know this is very difficult, this is the most difficult parts of the Bhagavatam for many devotees, all this intricate explanation of the unfolding of the modes of nature and what happens. But if you want to understand what is happening inside of you, you have to understand this. Because the same thing is happening inside of you. And here we are trying to control our mind and our senses. But if you don't understand what mind and senses actually are and how they work, how you control them? You know, how you control them? You don't have this knowledge. So therefore, in this course, we are trying to give this knowledge. So it is now that time, 5:30. So please return tomorrow at 4 o'clock and we will go further. And it will become very interesting, and we will have more such graphs in more detail. This is taken from Upanishads, but we will have a more detailed one taken from Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know if I'll have it up tomorrow or the next day, but soon. And then you'll see in very great detail how creation comes about according to the Bhagavat Mahapurana. Actually, the Upanishads are simply giving a sketch. You see, they're giving a basic sketch. So that's why I wanted to start with this. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta, which means commentary on the Upanishads. So the Bhagavatam actually goes into much more detail than the Upanishads do. So that will be very interesting for you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.